This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Listen, Buster, you won't get four blocks in this neighborhood dressed like that.
Please?
No, and that is final. You are not going as a terrorist.
But all the guys are.
Hello, and welcome to Unequal Sequel. My name is Dave, and I'm one of the two hosts of this mysterious podcast.
Oh, and I'm Rich, and I'm the other host of this mysterious podcast. Think of me as the dude to Dave's Walter. He's a very angry man who loves bowling, and I just want my rug back.
Out of nothing, you've pulled that one out. Sensational. The premise of Unequal Sequel is very simple. We ask our guests their best ever sequel, their worst ever sequel, and finally their dream sequel.
And of course, we quite often drift off and talk about other things, life in general, other movies, and just stuff, you know.
I should also point out we do like to drop spoilers. So if we mention a film you don't want us to spoil, just, you know, zoom along a little bit and, yeah, go sort out your emails, delete the stuff you don't need and come back and it'll all be all okay. We also like to point out we did have a few audio problems with this, but they're okay, so just go with it. Because on today's episode, we are joined by Matt Coyne.
Matt is a brilliant author, and you may know him as Man vs. Baby, which is his blog and his social media that he does loads of tweets about the perils of parenting. It's hilarious. Go and follow him on social media and go and check out all the books that he's written. They are great.
Yeah. Because we're very excited to sit down with Matt and talk all things sequels with him.
These are Matt Coyne's Unequal Sequels. Enjoy.
Can you remember the first sequel you got excited about when you were younger?
I can, because, well, there was two really big ones. RoboCop 2 was one.
Yeah.
In school at the time, that was like a really... RoboCop was like a big deal at the time. Everybody's like quoting lines from it and stuff. So turned out RoboCop 2 was rubbish. I can't really even remember it, to be honest. I vaguely recall the baddie was about 10 years old or something in it.
Yeah.
But the one I really, really was looking forward to watching was Escape from LA. Escape from New York was a film that I just watched relentlessly, partly because it was the only like video we had. It came out in like early 80s sometime.
Yeah.
And you had to wait 10 years, I think, for Escape from LA. And one of the reasons why I was really looking forward to seeing it is if you ever get the chance, or if anybody's listening to this gets the chance, watch the trailers for Escape from LA before it came out, because they are unbelievable. They're very, very 80s. They're very schlocky and kind of camp. And Kurt Russell breaks the fourth wall in the trailer. it's they're kind of hard to describe, but if you imagine there's a bit in this is just in the trailer where he says something like, "I'm going to do the Bangkok move or let's play the Thai move or something like that," where he is confronted by these three bad guys all with machine guns, and he says, "I'm going to throw this can in the air," and then before it lands, at the point at which it lands, we all draw. And he throws it up in the air and then just shoots as soon as he throws it up in the air and kills them all, basically. But on the trailer, he then turns to the camera and says, "You got a problem with that?" It's just the lamest thing. It's the lamest thing in the world. But at the very start of the trailer, it's speaking to the theatre audience.
Yeah.
It's like no talking. No, I mean, it would be mobile phones now, but it was like no talking, no smoking. And then it goes, no red meat. And it says, no, it says all marriages must be approved by the government.
Yeah.
And then the trailer starts. And like I say, it's very, very camp and very, very schlock. But I was such a big fan of Escape from New York that waiting for that long and then the trailer's coming along, I was just so up for it. It's quite a good film still, like Escape from
New York. Oh, is it though, Matt?
I love it.
I think I've seen it. I've seen Escape from New York. I don't think I've seen
the first one's such a classic. Like, it's pure cult favorite John Carpenter. And then it's got to the second one, like you said, 10 years later, and the budget does not look good on film. Like, isn't it does a bit of surfing again or something in the second one?
Yeah. It's original sort of CGI surfing, whereby I think there's a tsunami and there's there's a car chase, but because he hasn't got a car, they jump on surfboards and ride the tsunami after the car. I mean, I know what you're saying. You know, whether it's as good as the original or whatever, it certainly isn't. But I love Escape from LA, and I think we'll establish over the rest of this episode what terrible taste I've got in movies generally. But I remember once going to Comic Con in Manchester, and I was in the queue, and everybody was like cosplaying and stuff, and basically everybody was sort of like really Harry Potter-fied at the time, so everybody was like,
"All right, yeah,"
like Harry or Voldemort or whatever in the queue. Apart from this one guy behind me, who was like Snake Plissken, character from Escape from New York. You don't know, but he was Snake Plissken, and one of the famous lines out of Escape from New York is "I thought you were dead." Everybody says that to Snake Plissken as he appears on screen and meets a new character. So I turned to this fella and said, "I thought you were dead." Thinking, I know you are. I get the reference. So I said, "I thought you were dead," and it's clear he didn't have the faintest idea what I was talking about.
Oh God!
Oh no!
Did you have to explain your own reference to him?
Well, in retrospect, I think it was just a fellow with an eye patch.
Fuck. Are you sure it wasn't like meant to be Nick Fury? Because those two get mixed up.
I mean, it may have been. I mean, I like to think it wasn't just a fellow with a bad eye.
Oh my God! Could you imagine if it was?
It clearly wasn't Snake Plissken from his reaction, anyway. But yeah.
What were you dressed up as? Were you dressed up?
I was. You know, from Watchmen, the Rorschach from. I found this supplier in Japan who could give you a white, like a face mask. And if you breathed really heavy into it, it would change the pattern on the front.
Oh, that's really cool. Worship,
basically. So I found that. And it turned out that whatever chemicals were in it were not good for my eyes, face, or ears. Everything kind of swelled. So if you're thinking of going in Comic-Con at Rorschach, then get it from a reputable supplier, that particular mask. It took 31 days to come and almost killed me.
Totally worth it, though, was it?
Well, it was the best Comic-Con ever. Yeah,
I bet. Do you reckon, like, Snake, is that Kurt Russell's best role? Or are you, like, a Thing kind of fan?
I think it's it's his favourite role. He clearly absolutely loves it. I mean, just watching him play the character, I think he wanted to make another one, and he said no. The second one was terrible. So only Matt watched it. So
did he even get a cinema release? The Escape from LA.
It must have done because that theatrical trailer was pure theatre. So it'd be a bit lame if it's telling you in sat on your own settee to no talking, no smoking, etc. It must have got a theatrical release.
You had to wait until VHS then.
Yeah, I did, yeah. But it, like I said, I can't imagine it was. It might not have got a UK release. My suspicion is that it wasn't. It's not. I mean, neither film is particularly well known outside of, like, it is very a very cult following, even the first one.
Yeah.
The one certainly is. But, I think it's definitely is. I'm trying to think of other roles where he seems to be having as good a time, and I can't think of one. And I know that's not a very good measure of whether it's someone's best role as an actor, but I quite like to see people having a good time on there.
I don't know. I think if people are having a good time, they make a better movie, I reckon.
Definitely. I can't bear watching a film when you've already heard rumblings beforehand that they've all fallen out and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's not the film you want to watch, really.
No.
I'm trying to think of more Kurt Russell films, and honestly, my mind's gone blank. I've got Executive Decision in my head with Steven Seagal.
Well, how many did it make with Goldie Hawn? What was the...
Overboard.
Bird on a Wire, was it? Overboard.
Yeah,
it was more comic roles were quite good as well, but it was always kind of playing the same person. It was always quite but very likeable as well. Like, I mean, I think all Kurt Russell stuff he comes across as well.
Yeah, I know recently there is talk of a remake of Escape from New York, but I would quite like to see him play that character again, like an old man Snake. I think he's still got it in him. I mean, he's still got a wonderful beard and hair.
What, like Escape from the Nursing Home? Or like,
or just another Escape from London. I don't know. I'm just throwing out Escape from Paris, Escape from Detroit. I feel like it has to be in America, actually.
Yeah, you can't have Escape from Birmingham, as many people would like to. Obviously, if anybody's listening from Birmingham, that is clearly a joke.
It's a lovely place, Birmingham. It really is.
It is.
What is your best sequel ever?
Well, I'm sure that when I say it, then you'll be like, we've heard this 1,000 times before, and I'm sure quite a few people say before, but Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Brilliant choice.
Great sequel.
It's just a fantastic... Here's the thing. I don't think it's a perfect film, but it is a perfect sequel.
Mm.
And that, I know that, I know, deep, yeah.
We'll get into that.
Because I think there is... a couple of things. One very major thing that I hate about Terminator 2, absolutely
all right,
about it, and that's the whole. How do I describe it? The Pinocchio Terminator T-800 wants to be a real boy stuff. All,
right.
Is this why? This is why humans cry, and why do humans have tears, and all that sort of stuff. I can't bear that about it. I think that's because he's a Terminator. It's not Johnny Five. You know what I mean? He's not supposed to be like a cuddly robot, kind of. I just don't. I don't buy any of that element of it. So I hate all the tear stuff, and I hate the thumbs up at the end. And I know that divides people about it, but I'm just not a fan. It couldn't be cheesier if he did put a peace sign up at the end as he's melting.
That's true.
So that's what I mean about.
That made me cry.
The thumb made you cry.
Yeah, for like first I was emotional. I was well into Terminator 2 when I first watched it.
Dave, you cry at everything. Right?
Not when I was younger. I was not a crier. The crier has come in the last 10 years. But now I'm more likely to cry at it when I watch it, yeah. I like how you're describing anything you hate about it, and this is meant to be your best sequel.
Well, I was trying to justify saying that it's not a perfect movie, but it is a perfect sequel. So just to put to one side that I don't think it's a perfect film, but in terms of it being as a sequel, I can't think of it. It ticks certain boxes for me as a sequel. I'm sure you go over 1,000 times, but one being that don't tread the same ground. Mm. It doesn't do that at all. It definitely moves the story onwards, but in a way that infuriates me about some sequels. Great if you move the story onwards and take it in a different direction, do different things with it. But you have to account for what's happened before. You can't just pretend that the first film doesn't exist. And T2 does that. It kind of, because I'm one of those people who gets to the end of Terminator and I'm thinking, well, someone's going to find that crushed robot in that compressor. Mm. And you have to account for that. So they do. And they do that with almost everything. They account for it. And so many sequels don't do that. And Terminator, I think, is pretty much a perfect film. It's just a different sort of film, I think. To me, Terminator is basically a horror film. It's basically Michael Myers chasing you down, Jason Voorhees chasing you down. It's the same principle. It's not very complicated, not very complex. And Terminator 2 is just so much more than that. Like, I mean, and I genuinely think Terminator 2 is a better film than Terminator, but they're almost completely different genres in a way. Terminator is a sci-fi to a degree. I do see it as that horror, you know, an evil monster hunting you down in the same way Michael Myers did. Everything about Terminator 2 is the bits of Escape from New York and Escape from LA, that aesthetic of it, you know, that's kind of like the late 80s, early 90s, that kind of stuff is I love it anyway. But the, even like the font at the start and the, and the that industrial music of someone just last
the music, like, yeah,
dun 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 dun.
Nah. As soon as that comes on, you're thinking, right, everybody shut up, sit down, we'll watch it. But what does everybody else say about it? Because it must have had, how many people you've had on now that's said TV?
I think we've averaged one a season.
Yeah, three or four, yeah.
But it has been up there as the most popular pick, as well as Wrath of Khan.
I guess, yeah, that's popular.
This, Aliens has had a
Aliens
couple.
Is popular, yeah. Yeah, but I think this is probably up there in terms of like people's best sort of sequel that's better than the original kind of thing.
Everyone loves Terminator 2.
Yeah, everyone loves Terminator 2. And I think that like you're absolutely right. Like it kind of treads new ground, especially in kind of like character growth, because Linda Hamilton is a completely different person.
Yeah.
And has been on a believable journey essentially from the first one. You know, you can really understand where she's come from.
And that's what I mean about the continuation and making sense as well. Because you would be institutionalised. If you're coming out of there and say, I've been hunted down by a robot from the future, well, get ready. They're going to put you in a padded cell, and that's where you're going to be. And they're going to take your kids off you, and they're going to give it to two terrible foster parents, and that's where they're going to live. And it's always difficult when you talk about believability in sci-fi and fantasy and all that sort of stuff. But it has to be believable within its own universe, and that's absolutely what they do with this, I think. And you're right, the fact that Linda Hamilton comes back and she's no longer this helpless female who's been pursued, and she's literally physically built like a brick. And mentally, absolute hard as nails. Even when she's required to leave her son and say, no, I need to go and kill the guy who instigates all this by creating a chip. She's like, right, I'm just going to go do that. So, yeah, character growth is a big one. The fact that it does continue in a way in a different direction, in a direction that's interesting. That's before you get to the special effects and stuff like that, which at the time were like, oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because you're
completely blown away by it.
You mentioned RoboCop 2, and we watched it not long ago, and it's amazing to think that this and RoboCop 2 are like, what, 9 months apart?
Is that right? Then,
RoboCop 2 is still using like stop motion animation for stuff. And this is like incredible. You know, it looks a little bit shonky now, but it still holds up. It's still perfectly believable.
Oh, without a doubt. I wonder when Total Recall was in that sort of time span.
Oh, yeah.
Because some of that was shonky special effects as well. You know?
I feel for some reason Recall's saying 90 to me, but Rich is having a look. When did you first see Terminator 2? When did it first blip onto your radar?
1990. Yeah. Spot on, mate.
I don't remember watching it at the cinema, so I probably didn't. But I don't remember the first time I saw it. But partly because I've seen it so many times, I guess.
Yeah. It's part of your DNA now.
It feels like it's always been. It's always been weird,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's weird. When I was a child, it was an 18 or 15. It was quite violent. I wasn't allowed to watch it. But they still had Terminator toys. So, like, you're still kind of associated with it because, obviously, you kind of knew Arnie and stuff as well.
I think I watched it when I was about 12.
I was blowing. I should have watched it. But not in 91. I didn't watch it when I was six.
No.
that would have been mental.
But I was big into comic books and stuff, and they had some Terminator comics that weren't canon, basically not part of the. I try to remember the makers of it. It wasn't Dark Horse at the time. It was an earlier precursor to Dark Horse, I think. And they had some brilliant Terminator comics, so I probably read them before Terminator 2. And there's an awful lot in those comics.
Yeah.
But it could be used in adding future Terminators on this one. And then they don't choose to. I mean, the later ones, there's an awful lot of source material there that they don't bother with. And they now tend to tread old ground, which is what makes them so poor, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you reckon you saw the second one before the first one?
I don't think I did, actually. I think I probably caught Terminator on TV at some point.
You went the right way around it then.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, and but I don't think I remembered Terminator. I don't think I went into Terminator 2 with Terminator, with the story of Terminator in my head. So,
oh, wow.
So yeah, to be honest, it's so long ago. No, I can't. Terminator sticks there, and Terminator is. I'll watch it when it's on, but I don't kind of seek it out in the same way. Like, I mean, which I guess is why T2 is that good a sequel, is because you I will seek it out in a way that I won't.
What's the sequence that really stands out for you
in Terminator 2?
Yeah.
Oh, probably. Oh, there's just loads. Persistently, I get a little shiver every time he reloads the shotgun. I'm thinking, that is just so cool. Yeah. So every time he does that, that's cool.
Yeah.
One thing that really sticks out for me, I'll tell you what really sticks out for me, and it's only because when I saw it most recently, I got annoyed with Lindsay, my girlfriend, because she was on a phone at the point at which this happened on the screen.
How dare they?
And ordinarily, I don't mind, but it was the bit where Arnie's coming out of the lift and Linda Hartley comes, slides around the corner as she sees him, and she can't get a grip, and she's scrabbling to get back. I think that's a brilliant sequence. And the fact that she was on the phone during it made me furious.
Was that the first time you made her watch it?
No, she's seen it plenty. Like,
oh, good.
No choice, but even still, you shouldn't be on your phone for that sequence. And also the bit where Linda Hamilton breaks into the house of the guy who's created the chip. That's now as watching it as a parent, and the little boy's kind of trying to protect his dad, it gets me in a different way. Like, you know, I think that's a really strong, really strong sequence as well. Like, I mean, so there's just so many of them. That's again without mentioning the special effects stuff. Striding out of the fire, or the nuclear blast to the playground. That's
brutal.
That's as bad as Threads, that for me. And I'm from Sheffield, and Threads sits with me like nothing. But that blast through the playground is as bad as any representation of nuclear war that I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's the bit that really scarred me when I was little, when I first watched it. Her,
me too.
Turning into a skeleton and just holding on
like to the fence. Yeah, yeah, that is freaky. This like just like Threads, the nuclear war one set in Sheffield. People might be listening not knowing what it is, but it is basically a story. It is a faux news documentary about a nuclear attack on Sheffield, basically. But there's a bit in that where our local shopping precinct, a blast comes down the street and it melts some milk bottles, and a lady who's walking along wets herself. And it's not comical or anything.
Oh.
But basically, that stuck with me as a kid, right up until I saw T2 and her clinging to the fence. And that's the thing that really sticks with me now in terms of you know, that I imagine the way that sort of like Americans get duck and cover stuck in their head, and the idea of being under a desk and stuff like that during Cuban Missile Crisis or whatever, that's my version of that. It haunted me for a while.
Oh my god! How do you feel about the sequels and the franchise as a whole? Terminator now. Like, have you watched them all? Is the first question.
Probably. I mean, how many is that? Probably watched two. Is it what's the latest? Dark Fate, the latest one, or
that was the last one? Yeah, I think there's six now.
Yeah, it's all gone a bit Hellraiser. I mean, they just lost their way a little bit. I don't really. As I said, they're treading old ground. They're messing with the timeline, which I don't like.
Mm.
And when you start dicking around with the timeline and starting to affect previous, you know, for me, the canon Terminators, then I don't like that either. I mean, and it's a shame because it could. There's a lot of legs in it. There's a lot they can do with the idea of different types of Terminators and things like that. As I said, there's not an awful lot of source material from the comics. You know, where they use kind of more terrorist type tactics of use, like baby robots and things like that to lure people in and stuff like that. There's an awful lot of cool stuff in it, but they seem to just want to tread old ground. And the effects are amazing. You know, some of the all effects are amazing now, aren't they? Really, it's difficult. I completely understand and appreciate the skill that goes into CGI, but sometimes being able to see the joins makes you realise how incredibly good it is.
Yeah.
I miss seeing the joins sometimes.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, bad CGI can spoil a film, but I don't think good CGI can make a bad film better.
That's absolutely spot on. Yeah,
if it's a bad film already, you know.
I think kids as well now, they just assume that everything's possible on screen. You don't have to do and stuff like that. It's just, you've managed to, you know, it's no problem. This guy's made out of liquid metal and he walks through this. But at the time, it was like, holy shit.
Mind-blowing.
It was mind-blowing, wasn't it? Like, it's like that. Talking to my little boy, he can't even get his head around there not being Netflix.
Well, the idea of Netflix arriving in the post,
like, what did you do? I was like, well, we just had four channels on the telly.
Couldn't even record it.
Didn't even have a remote control. Had to get up and press the buttons.
Well, we were one of the first people to have a remote control on our estate, but it did have a wire. He was still plugged into the TV. Amazing. I think they don't know they're born, do they? Without
What age are you going to show Terminator 2 to your son? He's 7 now, so I'm guessing not yet. What is an appropriate age, do you reckon? 10? Does that sound reasonable?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what particular sequence I suppose it's more the overall. The fear and the, you know what I mean, the anxiety it might cause of seeing one of the main characters burned alive against a fence. that might prove to cause a couple of nightmares or whatever. So yeah, I'll probably wait. I don't, because he's my only child, I don't really have a benchmark to think of what is 9, 10, 11, what's the point at which you can kind of deal with that sort of thing. But he's watched some 12s. He's watched Thor Ragnarok, which is brilliant. It's a great film.
It's great.
We were kind of probably two-thirds of the way through before I realised this is deeply inappropriate, but I was just enjoying it too much to turn it off, I think. So there's a couple of 12s that he's seen already at 7. I'm just things like that. They're a little bit more kind of comic booky and...
colourful.
I
would probably go Terminator 2 first and Terminator 1. I think Terminator 1's a bit more brutal.
It depends on the kid, though, right? Like, you know what your kid will like. Like, I wouldn't show my son Terminator 2 because I know exactly the same. He would be anxious about nuclear war, essentially.
Yeah.
He would then just be worried about that forever. But Jurassic Park and someone getting eaten by a dinosaur, he's fine with that. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, Charlie's watched Jurassic Park. He's fine with that as well. So it is weird. He's perfectly happy with some fella getting eaten on a toilet. But, I mean, maybe that's just the rationalism of a 7-year-old, because it's fine to be not scared of a dinosaur eating a fella on a toilet, because that's not going to happen. Nuclear war could. So let's not go down that
road. Robots could happen.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations of Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So this is not your worst one. We're not going on to that yet. But what has been your most disappointed experience of a sequel. So not the worst. One you went in really high and you came out and thought, oh, a little bit like Escape from LA.
Except not, because Escape from LA is opposite. Great movie. there's quite a few, but I would have to say, I would say Battle Royale Requiem.
Yes.
A terrible, terrible sequel. Because Battle Royale is a great, great movie.
Mm.
And because, as well, from a personal point of view, I first of all, I read Battle Royale, the book first, before I saw Battle Royale. And that is a thick book, right? Mm. So I was very, very invested in Battle Royale when I saw it. I then watched it, thought, that is amazing. What an absolutely great film. But when I watched it, you couldn't get a hold of Battle Royale Requiem full of no money. I had to order it from Japan, but at certain the regions thing with DVDs or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Supplier to get region 2 DVD of Battle Royale Requiem. Anyway, I waited for it for 30 days. So it was big anticipation, really, for Battle Royale Requiem. And it's just nowhere near as good as the original. It's an attempt at a it's so half-arsed because it's an attempt at a continuation of what's happening at first, but strips all of the fun out of that first film and throws in loads of kitchen sink rubbish about how the bad guys now, or the teacher, he's kind of like he's fed up in his marriage now and all this sort of stuff. Well, who cares? Give them the bags with the flamethrowers in,
yeah,
and let them kill each other on this island. But why are you messing with a perfectly good formula? I know a lot of people say about Battle Royale being Hunger Games, basically having ripped off Battle Royale, I'm in two minds about that. Quentin Tarantino says it was definitely ripped off from Hunger Games, and there's an awful lot of Hunger Games in it. Certainly the first. The first Hunger Games.
Yeah, definitely. I'd agree with that.
But in fact, the best stuff about Hunger Games is from Battle Royale, I'd say. You can strip most of the other stuff out of Hunger Games, and you'd still end up with a reasonably good film if you just kept the Battle Royale stuff. You know, I mean, all that is padding to me. The entire. I'm trying to think of the bit where. When they've been told that basically they're going to be the class that has been selected under this law to fight each other, the bit where they're all in the classroom and essentially are told one after the other to go and grab their bag, it's our weapon, our tool, and you kind of already have kind of favourites by then. It's weird how you quickly think oh, I like that guy. I'm not so much of a fan of that one. And when one of the characters, who I quite like, immediately picks up his bag, and somebody's already pulled out like a Glock, and somebody else has got like an AK-47 or something. And he opens his bag and he's got a pan lid. But that's the point at which this is a great film. And they ruined it with Battle Royale.
I remember watching the second one, and they end up joining the Taliban pretty much. Is the end of the second one. I know the first one's quite political. I know that. But then the second one come along and they tried to say, I don't even know what they were trying to say by the end of it. Mm. It was really confusing. Yeah, we watched this, like you said, at uni. Someone got a copy of it and they played it in like our screening room. Because otherwise I wouldn't know it was a thing. And I was like, oh, wicked, because Battle Royale is so good. And like you, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they really.
The kills aren't even as good. It's just not as entertaining.
No, they really ballsed it up with Requiem. It's a shame because that should be a franchise as well, really. They killed it stone dead with that. And they probably won't make it into a franchise because it's now people will think it's just ripped off Hunger Games. Because such is the world.
that is true.
Which is a shame, real shame, I think.
I don't know. I think that the Japanese, that they don't go quite as heavy on the franchises as the Westerns, like the Americans.
Just like, you know, the kaiju franchises.
Like the Godzillas, they're very protective of that kind of... Yeah, but they're very protective of certain things. I know the Americans have been trying to make a remake for years, but then I think Hunger Games came along and
probably it's like,
well, we've done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they really haven't, have they? You know,
no, it's definitely not the same.
Similar to Battle Royale, or you think it ripped it off or whatever. Hunger Games is vastly inferior, and they could easily make a Battle Royale, as far as I'm concerned.
Have you still got your copy of Requiem?
Half, probably, yeah, somewhere stashed away. I've got a loft full of DVDs that'll never be watched again.
You can sell them for 1p now.
I'll give my requiem to Music Magpie. And
yeah, that's what it is.
share the joy with somebody else. Yeah.
Let's go on to worse then. Let's delve into this masterpiece.
I think we can talk about your original worst and then talk about why we had to pick another one.
Right. So what's your worst sequel? How do we get there? Take us on a journey.
Right, okay. So my original worst sequel was The Jerk 2. And I have very little more to add other than the fact that it's one of those sequels with T-O-O rather than a digit. That's good enough for me to say that's a terrible, terrible habit. But The Jerk, I think, is a brilliant comedy film.
Yeah.
Steve Martin's one of those people who transitioned from stand-up to comedy acting so beautifully, so brilliantly, and so likably. I think he's one of the most likable actors on screen from all the way through, you know, 80s, 90s. And The Jerk, I think, is a great film. It's problematic. They're all problematic now, I'm afraid. You know what I mean? If you watch it now, I have no doubt there are certain things that you will, you know, cringe a little bit at and maybe think, today, that's not really great. But it does stand up as from a purely comedic point of view. It really does stand up. The Jerk 2, I've only seen it once. And one of the reasons why I didn't choose The Jerk 2, it sounds like I've chosen The Jerk 2. I haven't chosen The Jerk 2.
Yeah, we couldn't find it.
It's because we couldn't find it anywhere.
Nah,
literally nowhere. Couldn't find it. I have got it. It's probably on video rather than DVD. But it's trying to remember. Basically, it is. I think it's related to Steve Martin's original character in The Jerk. And I think it's basically a retreading of The Jerk. But the reason why I initially said The Jerk 2 is because I love The Jerk so much that I thought, I remember that being shit, I'll choose that.
Yeah.
So to take you on the journey a little bit further, I realised I was looking at it from the wrong point of view. Rather than choose your favourite film that has a sequel that lets it down,
yeah,
choose the worst film you've ever seen.
and you really did.
Find out whether it's got a sequel, and that must be worse. And it is, which is why I chose Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2.
Awful. Awful.
Shall we move on?
It's so bad. It's so bad.
I mean, which one, the first or the second?
Because I've not seen the first one.
I've never seen the first one.
I only watched the second one just for this podcast.
Okay, if you want a real journey, I'll tell you how I came across the canonical Paul Blart Mall Cop. The first.
Please.
The original. This is a strange tale, but basically, I watched Paul Blart Mall Cop in Cambodia on a bus.
Okay.
We were supposed to. I used to travel quite a bit when I was younger, and we were supposed to travel from Cambodia into Vietnam on a boat. But there was some drought or something at the time that meant the river was too low. So we got a bus, like a working men's club type coach. And I was on it for 11 hours, and they played Paul Blart Mall Cop on a video screen above the driver. Well, pretty much 11 hours, I think.
Oh, wow.
Well, there was Paul Blart Mall Cop and two episodes of Mr. Bean, and they were on.
Oh no!
On loop.
Yeah, and I was surrounded by people who thought Paul Blart was hilarious, which made it so many times worse. I mean, like I said, I did used to travel quite a bit when I was younger, and bad things happen when you go off the beaten track a little bit. I've been I've been arrested, I've been mugged, I've been shot at. Trying to cross into Guatemala. I was once bitten on the dick by a piranha, right?
Wow.
But Paul Blart Mall Cop for 11 hours on that coach is the worst thing that's ever happened to me on my travels.
Brilliant.
Right? If I'd have got off that bus and been confronted by... If one of the writers of that would have been on that bus, I would have had to be physically restrained. Because it's just so, so bad. So,
yeah, it is.
So what I thought So for this podcast, I thought, right, so I'll go and watch Paul Blart: Mall Cop 2. And it gets like worse reviews and worse star ratings on everything from IMDb.
It does, yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes than Paul Blart: Mall Cop, which is the worst film I've ever seen. It's hard to describe how bad it is. But I'm going to try. No, I'm not going to try. What I'll say is this. One of the worst things about Paul Blart: Mall Cop 2 happens in the first 2 minutes of the entire film, right? Because it makes Paul Blart: Mall Cop 1 completely pointless. The whole point of Paul Blart: Mall Cop 1 is that he gets the girl. In the first 3 minutes of Paul Blart: Mall Cop 2, they're divorced.
After a week or something.
Those 11 hours were completely pointless. and his mother gets hit by a truck in the first 2 minutes as well.
It's a dark few minutes.
Yeah.
It makes me angry.
I watched this twice in 4 days just to make sure it was that bad, because I felt like when I watched it the first time, I missed something. I was like, well, I know this is meant to be a comedy, but I don't remember laughing or anything.
I think I laughed once.
Anything funny. And so that was I put it on today and it was...
Yeah. I laughed once. It's about an hour in, and it's when Kevin James walks into a piece of glass and it looks like it genuinely hurt. That was funny.
I've done that before. That's brilliant.
Fair enough. I'll be honest. I did laugh twice in Mall Cop 2. Once was... it must be funny because I'm laughing while I remember it. It was the... when he's fighting the bird,
why?
A huge bird for absolutely no reason whatsoever. He just goes through a door in this hotel and there's a bird there and he fights, right? And the thing that I found funny in that was there's a fella playing the piano and he's just supposed to be there as well in this room playing the big rock piano while he fights the bird. And the fella just looks at him like he can't understand what's happening. And I just sympathised so much with that I did laugh at that bit. And there's one other bit as well that I thought was funny, and it's just the strange man in the warehouse eating a really old banana.
Yeah,
that's so weird.
He just happens to be eating an old banana. I don't
know. What's that got to do with anything?
I have absolutely no idea. I'll tell you how bad the comedy is, and this is genuinely true. If anybody's listening to this has not watched it, this is genuinely true. One of the number one jokes that spans the two Mall Cops is that the main character, Paul Blart, is hypoglycemic. That's the number one running joke throughout the entire thing, that he's hypoglycemic. At one point, he loses consciousness, and the only way that he can regain consciousness is by backpedaling under a child's ice cream that's dripping.
Oh, God, it's disgusting.
And taking some of the drips of the ice cream into his mouth so that it can then regain consciousness. I honestly, it is... I think it's supposed to be like a diehard spoof or something.
Yeah, supposedly.
I mean, they could have really leaned into Taken for it, couldn't they? There could have been a moment there when he could have done a funny version of the Taken speech. That's like true. Like certain set of skills.
I think that would require some like intelligence
writing. So. Yeah. I understand. It's not the worst film we've ever watched, but just because it is under 90 close. Minutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, but I got 40 minutes into it and I thought, oh God, it's got to be ending soon.
45, nothing happens for 45 minutes.
That's got to be it, isn't it? Like, looked at it, I was like, 40 minutes. I was like, shit.
I've been watching it
for 3 hours.
I don't understand how they got a sequel, because the first one must have done quite well. I looked at the numbers of this one and it was made for like 38 million and it made over $100 million. 38 million the budget of this one. And it made over 100. So it made its money back plus. Mad.
38 million pounds.
Yeah, what did they spend 38 on million on?
Bird. That's ridiculous.
I don't know. Hiring out the hotel. Every opportunity they advertised.
Well, they didn't pay for the hotel, did they?
Surely. Because the hotel in every single shot, the win. It's
even got the owner in it, isn't it? The hotel owner crops up.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way they paid for that hotel. I reckon that's just Adam Sandler and like
See,
crew.
That's a weird, having a scene as well when the owner of the hotel just rocks up with the.
Is he meant to be famous? Am I meant to know who he is?
Steve Wynn. He's a little bit famous in America, I think.
Oh, okay.
He's like a Trump kind of character.
I'm trying to think what the there's a movie where somebody's got really really bad plastic surgery and they're constantly drinking, but the water's pouring down their face. I can't think. But basically, Steve Wynn looks like that in that.
Yeah,
his face entirely motionless, and clearly he was supposed to have a line in it, but he must have blown it because it's cut. He just kind of stands there and gives a thumbs up and just leaves again.
You know, you were talking about that man that was playing the piano earlier.
Yeah.
Well, he was meant to be a recurring character. They filmed a lot with him, and he was meant to be like Deaf was meant to be his character, and they're meant to prove that Paul Blart can't die, basically. What? But that whole storyline got dropped.
That sounds like the best bit.
Yeah. That's why he keeps singing like "Not today, Deaf," and stuff like that. There's a few lines like that, a few along it that hit. He's trying to say he's immortal.
Well, that's the thing. You wouldn't know that didn't make any sense because so little of it makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. But, like, the story doesn't get going. Like, Rich says, until like an hour in, then they suddenly get to the heist.
There isn't a mall in Mall Cop 2, is there? I think it's in
it. No, they do for one bit because finally he gets into the Mall of America and he's like, this is my ground now kind of thing. But then that's like 2 minutes later, he's back in the hotel. I was speechless. Like I said, I watched it twice just really trying to understand it.
I can't believe you watched it twice. That's dedication, mate.
It's so short.
It's so shit.
I mean, I could have watched the first one because I still haven't seen that and I don't know the character, but I really like Kevin James. Like King of Queens sitcom a few years ago was a really funny sitcom.
Yeah, it's quite likeable. Paul Blart is not a likeable character at all. He's a terrible person. And he's weirdly possessive of his daughter and things, and he's just kind of rude and obnoxious to everybody. And you don't want him to do well. You want him to cop his Segway and go through a plate glass window.
Yeah, you're not cheering for him.
No,
there's lots
not.
Of fat jokes as well. I'm not quite sure.
It's basically... That's the principle of the script, isn't it? They must have gone in elevator pitch and said basically it's Die Hard. Everybody's got type 2 diabetes. That's the pitch for the entire thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
At Die Hard. That's the elevator pitch. And it's just fat jokes every 5 minutes, and some of them are just particularly cruel. Especially his teenage daughter is basically, oh, I'm a big girl now. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're all big boned. And, you know, I mean, it's fucking leave her alone. He's a terrible, terrible human. No wonder his wife divorces him in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, that doesn't set the tone of the film very well. Because I haven't seen the first one. So I thought, oh, he must be an unlikable character if this woman can't stick around for 6 days.
I think the first one, he basically stalks her into submission, doesn't he?
Exactly right, yeah.
I've not seen it either, but I have listened to a podcast all about it. So.
Well, the one believable bit of the script in the second one is that I remember in the divorce papers, she cites uncontrollable vomiting. And I know exactly how she feels.
Imagine if they did a third one.
No, I don't want to.
Like I said, it made money. And I think people would go and see it just to see how bad it is. And there's people in this film that are not small names.
There is every chance of it making, of there being another one. Because someone trousered a good amount of that £38 million, so $38 million. That's gone somewhere.
Yeah. Got one question about the bad guy. Why has he got two different colour eyes? There was a point he just shouted it at one point, but never really...
I assumed he had that that Bowie thing. I'm assuming he actually has two different
colour eyes. Yeah, maybe.
He doesn't in real life, though, does he?
But he doesn't do anything for the character. He doesn't in real life, no, he doesn't, yeah.
Oh,
he is Band Brothers.
I just assumed that he had that conditioning.
No, that is contacts for an actor.
Yeah.
He's in a lot of films, that guy. Walking Tall is the one I can...
Neil McDonough? Is it Neil McDonough? Something like that.
He's in Captain
America.
He's got
really blue eyes. Yeah. He's got really blue eyes in real life. But yeah, God knows.
I just assumed that I hadn't noticed when I'd seen him in anything else that he had two different coloured eyes, but they made sure that whatever amount of the $38 million they spent on his contact lenses, they wanted to make sure that you knew about it because he shouted that he had two different eyes.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, good for you, mate. Well done. Bowie had it. It's not a big...
pointless.
It's not, yeah. It's not an insult. Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
No, exactly. Big deal, mate. I've just seen somebody eating a really old banana downstairs.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Oh, the man. Bit where Paul Blart is kind of like ziplining between the two buildings and he gets stuck in the middle. I think it's the first time I've ever sat there and thought, I really hope he falls off. That's just the end of the movie. He just falls to his death and that's done.
That's the one point I felt anxious was when he got halfway across, thinking that he's gonna get out of it, really. I just wanted to snap and to have his body dashed against the side of the wind.
It's really bizarre because he's not even the... there's a lot of unfunny characters that they keep putting in front of you. And you're like, please stop putting unfunny people in front of me like this.
Yeah, the security guard from the World of the Mall or whatever it's called, or the Universe of the Mall.
Yeah.
Really, really unfunny. They've got
all of them
who just sleeps.
Yeah.
It's just dozed off every time and it's...
Kevin James' brother in it as well, isn't there?
It's like, all his mates. That's what I felt like I was watching.
Gary Valentine, who plays Saul Gundeschmutt, or whatever it's called. It was quite a good name. I quite like the name. That's Kevin James' brother.
Oh, is it?
Lovely. Yeah. He's also in King of Queens as well. Yeah.
He was paid $37.8 million. Spent the rest on the bird and the banana.
Kevin James took a pay cut to be in this film.
Really?
Yeah, because he wanted, like, it was meant to be like 50 or something, and he was like, "Oh, I'll take a pay cut," and they brought the budget back down to 38. Imagine how much Kevin James he was going. Oh my god, he must. Oh, royalties. I don't know.
But then it made more than it's like double it back or whatever it was.
Exactly. He's still making films.
That's frightening. Absolutely frightening.
What is the deal with the really attractive, like, hotel manager who somehow has a crush on Paul Blart for no reason? Like, this is
big men can be sexy too.
I know. Look, I am one, right? Come on. Like, but I wouldn't expect to turn my hotel and have the manager fall in love with me just for being a dick. Like, he is basically being a dick. They've said, "I'm really sorry, your room's not ready," and he's like throwing a hissy fit, and suddenly she's falling in love with him. What is that?
Is it supposed to be like that? You know, this alpha male bullshit where they're all like, you know, if you're kind of mean to women a little bit, or you're kind of arsy, you kind of backhanded compliments or whatever. Like, I mean, I can't, there's a name for it. I can't think what it is. Like, but even that fails, even the conceit of that fails because he's basically just a dick.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
So there's nothing at all about him that she's. They latch on a little bit. What it is that thing that Adam Sandler shoehorns into all his films that is kind of attractive. Mm. There's lots of films whereby basically women who work at Hooters throw themselves at Adam Sandler. And I suspect that wouldn't happen in real life if Adam Sandler wasn't Adam Sandler.
Again, I've got a fact for you. Adam Sandler's wife's in this.
Is she?
She is the woman that's been hit on by the...
That bit's awful as well.
That's Adam Sandler's wife.
Ah, that's in the bar where she's been harassed by another security guard.
Yeah.
And what's that all about? Is that, so instead of coming in and going, "You're out of order, mate," it's just, "You're pissed, I'll take you home at least." Paul Blart then tries to convince her that this guy's a good guy?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, wrong.
What?
Come on, guys. It's script's not good.
No.
Let's just...
No, but I think it is that Adam Sandler thing where he shoehorns into every script that basically women are attracted to him. And I think what he's trying to do is convince the world that it's true. And he put it's true.
Because it is produced by his production company, Happy Madison. So it is that lot. I'm going to put them all in one bracket, the grown-ups, all that.
Also that a lot. Terrible sequel.
Exactly.
But there are certain Adam Sandler films where Adam Sandler comes off as charming in a way that Kevin Smith doesn't. You know, so it just doesn't work because he's too much of a dick. He's almost like Adam Sandler in Jack and Jill rather than Adam Sandler in Big Daddy. You see what I mean?
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Has there ever been a sequel that has surprised you? As in the first film maybe was rubbish, but then the second one was good and so on, if that makes sense.
one film that did one sequel that really surprised me, Pitch Perfect 2.
Right. Here we go. Matt likes a bit of singing.
I cried watching Pitch Perfect 2, and that's not, I'm not even kidding.
Was it the friendship that did it for you?
But I should explain really that I cried because I had glandular fever, and I couldn't find a remote, and I ended up watching Pitch Perfect 2. And I am but a man, so I cried at the bit where Bumper turns down Fat Amy. But those of you who are a fan of Pitch Perfect 2. Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible film. But it did surprise me that I found myself halfway through blubbing. What is wrong with it? But as I say,
we've all been there.
I needed a full course of antibiotics. Not the Pitch Perfect 2 for glandular fever, but yeah, I think I was just feeling really emotional that day. So that definitely surprised me. There's quite a few that Exorcist 3. I'm sure you've had Exorcist 3 on before. No,
everyone's mentioned that.
Exorcist 3, because Exorcist 2 was so bad. I thought Exorcist 3 would be terrible, but I think it's a great, great horror film. And partly because being brought up Catholic, the iconography in Exorcist 3, right from the very off, really, really got inside my head. In the first opening sequence of Exorcist 3, there's like a shot that bursts through the church doors, and they swing open in the wind, and it zooms in on a crucifix, and the eyes just pop open, and then it starts. And that really sticks with me. So, but like I said, because X2 was so bad, I think X3 really surprised me. It may not be that great, but it's. But I remember it being a really, really good horror film. And in terms of surprising sequels, Thor Ragnarok, I mentioned earlier, that I've watched with my little boy. I think that's a great proper comic book superhero movie.
Yeah, and I absolutely.
Think the Thors. I found quite disappointing up to that point. I found him one of the more absolutely. Boring characters. And I think Thor Ragnarok just basically pulled him out of a hole. I think Taika Waititi's version of Thor, I think he's absolutely brilliant. So that surprised me.
Have you seen Love and Thunder?
Yeah, not a fan of Love and Thunder, I'll be honest.
No, no. That's all right, we're not either.
It's rubbish.
there's an awful lot wrong with it. And Russell Crowe, I think, is terrible in it. I think he's...
Yeah.
You kind of there's a definitely a mark to hit between comedy and action and fantasy, and it still sort of makes sense. And if you err one side or the other very slightly, then the whole thing falls apart. And Russell Crowe goes all full on comedy, and most of them just miss the mark completely in Love and Thunder, I think. And
you're
throwing too much at the screen, and nothing really works. And the whole thing is just a big breakfast. But that's not to say that Ragnarok isn't a fantastic sequel, I think.
Ragnarok is great.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Great shout.
Yeah. Are you a Marvel fan? Because you said earlier you're a comic book fan. How do you feel about the Marvels and DC sequels while we're here?
I mean, there's so many films in there. A lot of things disappoint me about it. A lot of things that I think have worked really well. The entire Infinity saga, I think they did that pretty well. I'm disappointed with, as a comic book fan, I'm disappointed with the obsession with Marvel and DC when there is so much source material. I'm a I grew up on 2000 AD, and one of the original things for Dream Sequel, I was toying with Dread. I think Dread's a fantastic movie and it deserves a sequel, and it's ridiculous that they're not gonna make one. But out of 2000 AD, there are so many stories there from like ABC Warriors and Rogue Trooper and characters like that that deserve full franchises that nobody even looks at because they're all obsessed with Spider-Man or they're obsessed with, you know, trying to make Superman relevant again, and they're trying to new things that they feel like shoehorn, and because DC's trying to catch up with Marvel, and Marvel's trying to rinse the entire thing, and it's a bit like the way that Disney is with Star Wars now, like just ring it and ring it and ring it until there's nothing left.
Yeah,
and maybe then they'll find things like 2000 AD or some of the indie comics.
I know that Duncan Jones, who made Moon, has been trying to make a Rogue Trooper for a few years now. I'm not quite sure.
It'd be absolutely brilliant for it. It would be so good. But there's things like Sonya and stuff like that, which are basically Game of Thrones things. This old Nemesis and Torquemada, and there's just so much material there. The Dread universe itself is absolutely enormous.
Yeah. And
the fact that with Dread, they took one element, which is Block Wars, out of 2018, the Dread stories, and they created what I thought was a pretty good standalone movie. But there is so much in the Dread universe in terms of the apocalyptic landscape outside of that. You've got the Death Judges, which would make a great movie. You've got the Psy Warriors and stuff like that. You've got these apocalyptic mutants. You know, the fellow with a dial on his head that he turns up to four to headbutt you and stuff. I mean, it's just such cool stuff in there. And it was such a good representation of Dread that I'm gutted that they're not going to make a sequel.
We had a chap called Jack who's from a podcast called Sequelizers, and he picked Dread as his dream sequel as well. And his idea for the sequel was like a whole kind of road movie across the Badlands, basically.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Kind of like Mad Max Fury Road, but
we kind of came out of it going, if we ever win the Euro Millions, we're making that movie.
there's a great story called Chopper Goes to Oz, which is about a surfer, but he's surfing the sky rather than on water. And the entire comic book series is the race, basically. And it's the race to try and... But it's kind of dystopian, apocalyptic, and he has to face people with grenades and mutants and all that sort of stuff together. That alone as a movie would blow Mad Max out of the water, in my opinion. Like, I mean,
no one will ever
make it, I don't think.
No.
Fingers crossed one day. But this is not the sequel,
actually. No. Let's go. What a link. So what was your dream sequel?
My dream sequel you've had before, I think, is E.T.
Never had that as a dream sequel.
Not had it as a dream sequel, no.
Well, this is going to be interesting. It's because I watched E.T. very recently with my little boy, and it hits the same marks E.T. did with me when I first watched it. In that he was
magic
upset at the bits where you're supposed to be upset, and he was excited at the bits where you're supposed to be excited, and that's quite rare in films now. I don't know whether you find it, but it is. To watch a movie and still be hit by those marks and that colour in a story is not seldom made these days, I don't think. But it's such a good film. And the reason why I chose it is because of the treatment for E.T. 2 that was made by the woman who originally wrote the treatment.
Oh, right, okay. It exists, does it?
There is a treatment. I printed it off.
Oh wow!
Listen.
I like how prepared you are, Matt, because you're also wearing a red hoodie today as well. That's like
I'm sure there's a filter which would make me look like I've got a small alien in a basket back in front of me. But this is the treatment for ET2. It's called Nocturnal Fears. It says story treatment by Steven Spielberg and Melissa Matheson, who wrote the original. But I'm going to read you the first paragraph, right?
Okay.
See whether you're not on board with this. Actually, first three paragraphs. Change that. In the night sky, there is an emotion churning about. It's really, really badly written. I can't tell you how badly written. In the night sky, there is an emotion churning about. The stars twinkle blankly, expressionless, as if to say that something is wrong. There is a slight breeze disturbing the treetops, or is it? Through gnarled branches, we gaze upon a familiar sight. In what seemed like only the blink of an eye, something has penetrated the night sky and nearly avoided our attention. A small noise, followed by streaks of stray light, further acknowledge its presence. The door is being opened on the giant ornamental mothership now resting in the forest clearing. A door opens and extends outward to make a ramp. Light pours from within and a figure emerges as a silhouette. The creature moves in a familiar fashion, a waddle. I mean, I'm on board.
I mean, so far, basically E.T.
Absolutely. And then it goes a bit sideways.
Okay. So how could E.T. go sideways? Well, such a lovely film.
Well, if I tell you that one of the script notes that immediately follows that is there have been numerous reports of unexplained cattle mutilations in the surrounding countryside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're ravenous, are they?
Well, it turns out that that's not E.T., you see. That's an evil version of the alien from his planet.
Oh, and, okay.
They've come, apparently they're at war or something, and it's a white version, like an albino version of E.T. Once it comes out of silhouette, you realise that it's got really sharp teeth and it's evil, and they've come to try and find E.T., who apparently is called Zrek, according to the treatment. And they've come to basically kill him or something, right? But it goes more sideways. This is the reason why this wasn't made, by the way. When I saw it was called Nocturnal Fears, I was thinking it was like it sounds like a David Duchovny soft porn.
It does.
But apparently it's much more sort of nasty and horror based than that. Apparently the evil creatures are carnivorous. I'm just reading bits out of the treatment here. But they managed to get Elliot draw into the woods and try to get him to tell them where E.T. is, basically. So what they do is they don't accept the truth in their responses. Whilst one child is interrogated, another is being examined. Gertie is crying and calling for her mother and for E.T. The others endure. The pain is tremendous for Elliot, and he breaks down and begins screaming for E.T.'s help. I told you it was dark.
Wow. Yeah, Jesus. Gertie's the sister.
Elliot blacks out, but the echoes of his last cry can be heard from a distance. At this point, we follow up with the echoing cry for E.T. into the cosmos, where the painful cry seems to die. So basically...
Jesus, that's bleak.
So basically, so Elliot is being probed, or whatever aliens do, on a ship, whilst being tortured to try and get information about E.T. He then cries out in pain. E.T. hears it from across the cosmos. But then E.T. apparently fires up the speak and spell again, and it reads, E.T., Elliot, I'm coming, or something. Yeah. So E.T. and E.T. appears. This is according to the treatment. Appears for the last 5 minutes of the film to save the day, which and apparently kicks these evil aliens' ass.
I've just got an image of like E.T. with like a massive machine gun and bullets.
I mean, I don't know how he's. I mean, last time he came to me, I think he died of a cold. I don't know if he's going to take out an evil alien race. But apparently, this is the thing. He's going to come back. And the main reason why ET2 hasn't been made is because of this treatment.
It sounds horrific.
I mean, what were they smoking at that point?
I mean, just the punctuation in it alone suggests some mushrooms at least. But it's horrific. It's basically it's like a horror version of E.T. And yet I still want to see it. I want them to make it. I need to see Nocturnal Fears. In fact, I want them to go further. I want E.T. to come back and harvest the eggs that he left in Elliot's stomach in the 80s.
Oh, my God. No.
Wow.
Sure, no. What, does it have a year on that, by any chance?
Treatment. In fact, he has a... Let me see. Yeah, July the 17th, 1982.
Oh, okay.
So it's immediately after.
Yeah.
Immediately after.
Yeah. I kind of think that basically he didn't want to make E.T. 2, was pressured by the studio after E.T. was so successful, and then it's made a deliberately shit treatment.
Oh, you've nailed it. Yeah. That's what he's done.
I mean, it's got to
Spielberg
be.
Notoriously doesn't like sequels, does he? Yeah. So,
especially at that point in his career, he wanted to do new stuff every time.
Yeah.
I mean, and he never made a sequel to Close Encounters either, and I wonder if what he was trying to do is combine the two. It's shonky.
I did think that while watching it today. I was like, oh, that ship's a little bit, you know,
yeah,
the lights the way. And obviously you have the John Williams music. You could possibly put them in the same world. I mean, if you see E.T. aliens in Star Wars.
Yeah. So, yeah. There is
all crossovers.
Maybe that's what we should do. Make a Close Encounters E.T. Crossover, because that would be another good sequel. Because I want to know what I want to follow Richard Dreyfuss after he leaves the planet, because he had a wife and three kids or four kids or something, and he just pisses off. I can sympathise sometimes. But how on earth? I mean, what happened after that? I need to know. I mean, I want to know the story of the family afterwards, and I want to know where Richard Dreyfuss went. If you are going to take a direction with ET2, in all seriousness, I don't think Nocturnal Fears is the way forward.
No.
Torturing children, you know, on board the mothership, and then E.T. Although coming down with a huge gun would be cool.
Would be amazing. You
know, reloading the way the T2 does, I would watch that all day long.
Absolutely.
So what would you like to see now? I reckon they could do it now, because you've got Drew Barrymore, she's an incredible actress.
Yeah.
The guy who plays Elliot is in those Midnight Mass TV series. They're all doing stuff.
Yeah,
I saw a reunion the other day. They all look great.
Yeah,
come on, bring him back to Earth.
Absolutely. I think I would make it with the adults as well. I wouldn't try and do a reboot or anything like that.
Legacy sequel. They're very cool.
Yeah. And I think there's a ride at Universal which is basically an ET ride where you can. Go to E.T.'s own planet or whatever, like, I mean, maybe there's something in that, especially if you did the crossover and find out where Richard Dreyfuss went, because his wife's looking for
him. He owes her 40 years of child support.
Exactly. if you followed to E.T.'s home planet, I think that would make an interesting film, because Elliot is asked in the closing scene to go, come with me, he says, like, I mean, and he obviously can't.
Because he's a child.
Yeah, because he's not a grown man who can drop things on a whim, Richard. But now he's old enough to go, isn't he? And he should be given that opportunity rather than be regressed to childhood and tortured by albino ETs. But it's worth the treatment. It is available online. It's like 9 pages. It's, like I say, it's terribly written, but it fills in some gaps on the name of ET and things like that. I mean, it's very interesting read. But yeah, I think I might have cottoned onto Spielberg's game there, because in terms of natural film, all joking aside, it will be proper shit. That whatever. Dark, Nocturnal, whatever it is.
I don't know. Spielberg, he's pretty good, that fella.
That treatment sounds terrible. Come on.
I mean, like I said, the reason why I chose it is partly because Nocturnal is because I want to see that film. I want to see how Spielberg turns that into a film that even it looks remotely like a blockbuster, like something you'd go to the cinema and watch, because it sounds absolute garbage. But I would like to see the grown up Elliot, the grown up Gertie, the grown up families and stuff. Partly, and it is nostalgia for E.T. partly, but it's also because it was brilliant during that time period. Close Encounters is a really good example as well. Like dialogue, you know, when the families are talking over each other, and it's 100 mile an hour, like, and it's like that's how families talk to each other. And I could listen to and watch that all day long. And I'd like to see him, you know, go back to that sort of thing. And so yeah, I'd like to see ET2, not turn off ears.
Those were Matt Coyne's Unequal Sequels. I'm really happy. I'm really glad we got Matt on the podcast.
He's such a lovely man.
I think he's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I cannot overstate how brilliant it was to have another dad going through some of the same crap that I was going through when my son was a baby. basically. Yeah. And some of the stuff he's still going through as a dad now, he's so relatable and so funny. It's really, really helpful because, like, there's loads of, like, mums supporting mums and stuff. There's not a lot of dads kind of supporting dads kind of stuff going on there. And, yeah, it's really, really good stuff. He's an absolute hero. I'm very excited he was on this. We had him on the podcast.
He was also very knowledgeable on films.
Yeah, so, yeah. Good movie knowledge.
That surprised me because, you know, the name of the game on this podcast is to talk about films, but he brought a lot of knowledge and some of his stories were really good.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed. Very good. Very good. I mean, stories. Very good picks as well. Terminator 2 yes. for best. Obviously, probably the best sequel ever. I know it's people say there, Godfather yes, Part yes. 2. I know people say Aliens, but Terminator 2, baby. It's got
to
be.
We had to go get through a season at some point, someone picking Terminator 2. I mean, it is brilliant. And I love just talking about it because there's so much to talk about in Terminator 2. It's it's somewhere I would say it's like a safe pick, but it's so fucking good.
It's a safe pick because it's true, though. It is yeah. a great sequel. You know, it's everything you look for. And talking of, like, I don't think we've gone from so high in people's picks to so low for their worst. Paul Blart 2.
Well, that was a roller coaster because we were trying to find the Jerk 2 for a while.
Yes. Yeah, we were. Yeah. The Jerk 2 was going to be his original choice and we just couldn't find it anywhere. It's so bad.
It's not on the internet, which is rare yeah, for a movie. Somewhere deep down. I mean, there was a copy on YouTube, but another podcast is talking over it. I don't think we could have watched that. No. And then we found some copies in CX. Yeah. Around the country that were like wouldn't get to our house in time, basically.
We'd have had to have driven across the country to go buy.
Yeah, the Jerk that didn't 2. Seem like financial sense to me.
No, but Paul Blart 2 was an equally brilliant choice because, oh my God,
that
thing is awful. Although I have learned since we record the podcast, there is a dark side of the mall, which, you know, like people sync up Pink Floyd with Wizard of Oz, and right. if you play like the Dark Side of the Moon album, it syncs up perfectly with Wizard of Oz. Apparently, right. if you play it with Paul Blart 2, it syncs up.
Which music?
The whole album. If you start the album at the same second you start the movie, then it's the album syncs up with the movie.
That's terrifying.
Look it up on YouTube. If you don't believe me, look it up. It makes the movie so much better.
I knew at some point someone was going to pick that film. I had never seen it before, and I thought, I'm just going to wait until someone picks it. And then someone did, and horrible. I've watched it twice now because I couldn't believe how bad it was the first time. First time I watched it, I wasn't really concentrating on it, and then I thought, okay, I have to check that is what I just watched. So a couple of days later, I watched it again, and it was so much worse the second time.
Yeah. If you want to hear people ranting, I know I say this a lot. I know I do. But if you want to hear people ranting about Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, go and listen to the Sequelizers episode on it. It's very, very good.
There's also a podcast. There's a Do Paul Blart Till I Die or something. And it's a group of friends who record it every Thanksgiving.
Like the worst idea in the world or something. And they
something
watch
like that, yeah.
A bad movie every year, every week.
Oh, but this then one they do every year decided, yeah,
every Thanksgiving they watch Paul Blart 2.
Oh, no, thank you. No. I've watched better films on Thanksgiving. I mean,
I've had more fun colonoscopies. I've said that before, but you know.
Yep. and his dream pick was
E.T.
Which is intriguing because this pitch was actually real.
Yeah.
This is Steven Spielberg's pitch for E.T. 2. Not because I think he wanted to make it, because I think he wanted to scare off the studio. Pretty much.
The treatment
is wild. It's a wild ride. Yeah, I'm glad that didn't get made, but I'm also curious to see that film. Imagine if they turn around to Steven Spielberg and go, all right, go do that. I'm like, oh, I've got to make this film now.
Steve, you've done it again. Here's a big bag of money.
Fuck.
If that got made.
Let's go talk to some kids. It was a wild ride. But yeah, thank you, Matt. Go check out his stuff. Man vs. Baby, Instagram. Twitter.
Even if you don't
check
have
out his
kids,
website. Yeah, he's no, hilariously his books. Funny. His books are brilliant.
His books are brilliant. In fact, I've got a mission now, because I have a row of books in my bathroom, which are my this is going to sound bad, my toilet books. I quite like to have a little break and read.
Bad, yeah.
So yeah. I've got one of Matt's books there. So he's ticked off the podcast list. And I'm wondering if I could get through all the authors as guests in our podcast. It'd be pretty epic because I've got like Billy Connolly and James Acaster.
Oh, yeah. And then we should definitely tell them that they're a toilet book.
Yeah, you're a toilet book. Yeah.
Okay. Matt, we didn't tell you in person, but you're a toilet book.
I'm sorry. That sounds worse than it is.
Yeah. Do you want to see that? See the people out?
I probably should, shouldn't I, really? Yeah,
this is a great time to stop.
I've got no links between that, between toilet books. If you like toilet humour, this is the place for you. Yeah, go back and listen to all other episodes. I'm sure you'll find some somewhere. We've got brilliant interview episodes just like this one. We've also got all of our extra episodes. Go back and listen to those. If you're a big fan of Matt's and you're just tuning in to hear him and you thought, actually, quite like this podcast, I'll go back and listen to the rest of it, then hit that little auto download button, hit the subscribe button. We'll drop into your pod player of choice every single week. You can also find us on social media and say hello. We are at UnequalSequel on Twitter and Instagram, or you can send us an email, unequalsequel@hotmail.com. If you really, really like us and you're a big fan, you can find even more of us on anotherslice.com/unequalsequel. We have a little subscription service where you can get some more from Matt, a sequel to this episode, and even more of our sequels to our other episodes. And also some extra bits. We've done some trailer breakdowns and all sorts of bits on there. It's only $2.99 a month. Go along, click that button, and we'll have some more extra content for you. If you can't afford that, we understand. Times are tough at the moment. Just give us a little rating. 5 stars, little tick, little heart. Write us a little review. We'll love you forever, and it helps other people find the podcast.
Voila. Do you know other podcasts pre-record this stuff? Like they have it, they just drop it in. I make you do it every time.
You do make me do it every time.
And you do a great job, mate. Well done.
Yeah, well, it's more authentic if you do it every time. You know, you don't get, if we'd pre-recorded it, I wouldn't have been put off my stride by you putting a funny face halfway through that. And and stumbled over it. And then people would know it was pre-recorded.
People like our chemistry, Rich. That's what keeps them. That's the magic that people keep coming back for. Yes, thank you. Guys, for listening, thank you for all the people. Go check out Another Slice. We really do appreciate everything you guys say to us, send us, all the listens, the downloads. It's brilliant. We really like it. Happy Christmas. I've got nothing else to say, Rich. Got anything else to say?
Nope, that's it.
That's so it is a naked men from me.
It's naked now, men.
About to say that is Finnish for goodbye, but it does sound like I'm saying naked men. Naked men, naked men. It still sounds like naked. It's goodbye from him.
Bye,
guys. Just get out there, go read one of Matt's books on the toilet. You'll love it.
Doesn't have to be on the toilet. You can just read them anywhere you like. You know.
Yeah, but I haven't got any toilet books.
I can highly recommend The Mum Who Lost Her Shit. You know, I think that's a really good one.
Well, that does sound like a toilet book.
It does, see?
Writes itself.